I'm John Krall. Coming up on No Limits, we are going to talk about election reform. In a system in which the people get to choose their own government, the questions of who gets to vote and how elections should be held are crucial. Disputes about who is entitled to vote have been part of America's history from its very beginnings. Those disputes have picked up fresh urgency since the contentious presidential election of 2000, as many states, including Indiana, have adopted, among other things, controversial voter identification laws that have provoked heated political and legal battles. We will talk today about how elections should be conducted with our guests, Marion County Clerk Beth White, Tippecanoe County Assessor and former clerk Linda Phillips, and Julia Vaughn of Common Cause Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us toll-free at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about election reform here in Indiana. We're fortunate to have as our guests Marion County Clerk Beth White, a Democrat. Beth, good to have you here.
Good to be with you.
We also have with us by phone Tippecanoe County Assessor and former clerk Linda Phillips, a Republican. Linda, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Julia Vaughn of Common Cause Indiana. Julia, it's good to have you here.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks, John.
Certainly. We are talking about election reform. It's timely because obviously there's a national debate going on about the ballot access issues and all of the attendant issues there. And we also have an election coming up
ourselves.
So I'll start by asking Beth and Linda. We'll start with Beth first. How ready is Indiana for this upcoming round of local elections?
Well, I would say that we are very ready. The clerks in the state of Indiana do an exceptionally good job, not necessarily myself included, but we do work really hard. Not every clerk has an election this fall, mm-hmm. so a lot of the clerks are focusing on next year, which, of course, will be the big year for election turnout. Presidential year always tends to be. It's a more complicated election. It's also a bigger turnout. So we have an election in Marion County in 48 days. We are going to be ready. We are focusing now on making sure we can manage what we anticipate to be the turnout based on, you know, the kind of voting opportunities that are going to be available.
Linda, your take on that. How ready are we?
Well, I think Indiana has made huge strides, actually, with the passage of some legislation that allows counties to move to vote centers. Obviously, that's not something that's been done in Marion County, but it certainly does offer options for counties and makes voting more accessible.
Well, and Julia Vaughn, how ready, your perception from outside the system, how ready are we for the election?
Oh, I think, you know, the counties are certainly ready and well prepared to administer an election this year. So I'm confident that things will go smoothly.
You can join the conversation about election reform by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Julia, I'm going to stay with you for just a second. If you could, tell me a little bit about what you think an ideal election should look like, not in terms of outcome, who wins or loses, but in terms of just the process that should be followed here, and how far are we from achieving that ideal here in this state?
Well, you know, we have a recent study that looks at civic participation in Indiana, and it found a lot of interesting things, but the information it provided in terms of participation in elections was pretty darn discouraging, indicating that Indiana ranks 48th in terms of voter turnout and 43rd in terms of voter registration. So clearly, we've got a lot of work to do in this state before we provide easy access to the ballot box for Hoosiers. So we think things, you know, Linda mentioned vote centers. That's been an interesting experiment in a lot of Indiana counties. But there's been some reluctance from some others to make that sort of change. I think, you know, we need to look at the voter registration process. The fact that we cut off voter registration 30 days before the election at a time when a lot of voters are are just starting to get interested, just starting to think about Election Day. Certainly, we would be providing easier access if we moved that date forward. You know, the state of Minnesota, which has the highest voter turnout in the country, I think a key reason for that is they have same-day voter registration, meaning voters can show up at the polls, register, and then immediately vote. So something like that is a long ways away, I believe, here in Indiana, but perhaps we need to consider moving the deadline closer to Election Day. Even a couple of weeks would give people more time to take any to get themselves registered and prepared to vote. A lot of the things, I think one of the things people say to me is, I really don't feel like I have enough information about candidates. One of the things that we've tried to get a discussion going in Indiana, and it's really fallen flat, is to take the lead of the Western states. California, Washington, Oregon all publish voter guides. The state actually publishes, prints, and sends out to all voters basic information about candidates. So that would certainly help. And that's really outside the realm of election administration. But people are really starved for objective information about candidates. There's plenty of biased info out there, but not much objective stuff.
Beth White, why are our voter turnout numbers as bad as they are?
Yeah, that is a great question, and I really appreciate Julia's bringing that up, and that certainly the Civic Health Index is what we're referring to that was just released last week. Mm-hmm. I believe that the legislature in Indiana, when dealing with election-related matters, is moving in the wrong direction. I believe that in the time I've been clerk, which has been about 5 years, every single legislative session, the focus has been on restricting access, making the process more complicated, creating additional barriers to people exercising their vote. And that's troubling to me. Julia mentioned, and I know that Linda, who is a pioneer in this, will talk about vote centers. Vote centers are a good option for some counties. They are a different way that we vote in Indiana. There was a pilot, and then, of course, it was expanded this past year. But it is not the only solution.
We probably ought to, I ought to interrupt here and just for people who don't follow this stuff minutely,
sure.
Could you explain what a vote center is?
Of course. Yeah. In Indiana, we have traditionally had what's called neighborhood-based voting. That is, you go to a place in your neighborhood, a fire station, a community center, a church, and that's where you vote on Election Day. Vote centers completely change that model to locations, which we sometimes call super precincts, which are places in the community where anybody can go to any location. They are, you know, flexible. They are available. It's a great option for people, you know, with small children, people who work, you know, long hours, people who find themselves away from their home, really, on Election Day. And again, it is a difference in the way we do Election Day voting. Now, in Marion County, we have been engaged in a battle to expand early voting options for our people and our community. It's something I feel really strongly about, and it is different than vote centers. It's called satellite voting. Very different, but similar concept. Sure.
Explain the difference.
Yeah, of course. Satellite voting is an early voting opportunity that is outside the city-county building. State law requires, and we are happy to provide, early voting 29 days ahead in the city-county building. Every clerk in the state is required to do that in their principal location of the clerk's office. And as a matter of fact, this past legislative session, they made it even more restrictive and said that it has to be a primary location and only one location. And so that's disappointing. But it's an early voting option somewhere else in the community. Some of our voters may remember in 2008, we had two of these locations, one at the North Central High School and one at the Southport Town Hall. And there was extensive media coverage about the tremendous turnout. People lined up for a while. We had traffic and parking problems because so many people wanted this option. So satellite voting, early before Election Day. Vote centers, different Election Day procedures.
Linda Phillips, do you agree with Beth White's point that the General Assembly has been moving toward restricting voter access?
Well, maybe I have a little different take on it. I think that the General Assembly has put in some much needed controls on making sure that people are actually registered and that they are who they say they are. On the other hand, they have made enormous strides in, you know, by authorizing vote centers. And Beth's right. They're not right for every county, but for those counties that they are right for, they enormously expand the ability of people to vote. And I guess I would say it's kind of a mixed bag.
Well, let me ask this. I'm going to take the jump off point then. Why are our voter turnout numbers, the same question I asked Beth White, why are our voter turnout numbers as bad as they are? 48th and 43rd. Those are not the places we want to be.
Right. I think in large part, as we have begun, we've backed away from civic education in our schools, I think. I the levels of ignorance from high school seniors, and I have a son and his friends, the levels of ignorance.
Probably really, really happy that you just threw him under the bus, too.
Well, I'm pretty sure he's in school not listening to this.
Okay.
But, you know, the levels of ignorance there is kind of scary. So I think part of it starts with educating citizens, our students, about how important voting is and what that means. Another huge factor, though, and perhaps less of an issue in Marion County, but a huge factor in Tippecanoe County, where we have Purdue University, where we have an incredibly transient population, I don't know that our turnout is so dreadful as our numbers are so bad. You come to school here at Purdue and you register to vote, and we still have 30-year-olds that are registered in our freshman dormitories because we can't purge our voter rolls in any practical, meaningful way. So I think it's, you know, maybe kind of a chicken and an egg question. Are we really looking at the right numbers?
And could you explain that distinction? Why would a 30-year-old still be listed?
Well, under the national,
in a freshman dorm.
Right. Under the National Voter Registration Act, counties and when states cannot purge voter rolls solely for reasons of non-voting. So a voter that comes and registers here on campus, as you know, men may vote, they leave campus, they move to another state. When they register in another state, they forget that they were registered here in Lafayette, so we never know that they have left. We're pretty sure they're not there, but you know, there might still be a 30-year-old living in a freshman dorm. We don't know. But we can't remove them from our rolls. So it sounds, you know, so that's a person that's on my registration rolls in that county, I mean, in that precinct. So there may be 5,000 people in that precinct, and only really 100 of them are still living there.
Beth White.
Yeah, I just want to say, I appreciate Linda's perspective about that, and I think there is a sense of inflated roles in some respects, but every state in the country has to face this issue, and we rank in the country, you know, 48th. So obviously, other states are figuring out how to keep their roles as tight as they should be, and we're not. So what, you know, so what's the solution? I think that we can't say that this is the reason nationwide, because we rank so poorly in the entire country.
Well, and you know, I guess at the very beginning of the Republic, there were voices arguing that not that many people ought to vote, that the access to the ballot should be restricted. And is that we have to deal with today, Julia?
Absolutely. The state of Indiana just entered into a settlement agreement. It was sued by some national organizations, including the NAACP, for not, frankly, wholeheartedly implementing the National Voter Registration Act when it came to voter registration at state agencies that offer services to low-income people and folks with disabilities. And as it turns out, once the state has implemented the new procedures called for under the settlement agreement, guess what? Voter registration in those state offices has skyrocketed. So I think that, and you know, what's sad about that is immediately after the implementation of this law back in the 90s, Indiana did a great job. We were among the top three in terms of voter registration in offices providing services to low-income people. I think just through benign neglect over the years, there has been a lack of training of state employees who have these responsibilities. I think that, you know, when it comes to just basic steps, NVRA is going on nearly 20 years old, and Indiana was, you know, half-hearted in terms of wanting to implement that legislation. We were among the last states to actually implement it. So we've got, you know, basic work to do.
We are talking about election reform here in Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. We're talking with Marion County Clerk Beth White, Tippecanoe County Assessor Linda Phillips, and Julia Vaughn of Common Cause Indiana. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking about election reform today with Marion County Clerk Beth White, Tippecanoe County Assessor Linda Phillips, and Julia Vaughn of Common Cause Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. That's a toll-free number. Or you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We also have an election-related programming note. WFYI Radio will broadcast an Indianapolis mayoral debate coming up next Tuesday. The debate between incumbent Republican Greg Ballard and Democratic opponent Melina Kennedy will start just after noon, live from the Indianapolis Rotary Club. That's next Tuesday on 90.1 FM, WFYI Public Radio. We're also going to have Melina Kennedy as our guest on this program next Thursday, and Mayor Greg Ballard on the program October 20th. So please look forward to those dates. Well, we're talking about election reform right now, and I guess what I would like for us to talk about is why these issues get so contentious. We've mentioned the voter ID law. There are a lot of fights over about who, when exactly people should be able to vote. Going on across the country right now, even attempts to redraft the rules in regard to the Electoral College in some states. Beth White, you're shaking your head. Why? What is it that that makes this stuff so volatile?
Well, I think. Well, I mean, the bottom line to that question is that it's politics, and politics is, you know, is. Spirited, let me say. I don't want to use words like volatile or contentious because I think those are negative words. You know, it is true in politics, much like sports, you know, which is also an entity that has a lot of controversy, that there's a lot at stake. There's an awful lot at stake. It matters a lot who wins, who loses, and what they do once they win. And I'm shaking my head primarily because of the nationwide effort that seems, in my opinion, to be focused on restricting the vote. As you may know, the National Conference of State Legislators have reported that the hottest legislative topic in 2011, it's not jobs, it's not doing something about the economy, it's not the housing crisis, it is voter restriction, okay, in the legislatures all around the country. They've done things like lengthening the voter registration period. Julia is exactly right. We have one of the longest in the country, 30 days. It's ridiculous. Other states have done things like restricting early voting days, which is something that I have fought in the last couple of months so hard about, moving in the wrong direction. They have done things like passing more restrictive voter ID laws, more comprehensive kinds of changes in the way that people have access to vote. I think it's crazy. I think it's wrong. I think we ought to be focusing, much like Linda Phillips said, I agree with her about civics education. We do a curriculum in the high schools in Marion County called Why Vote or Youth Vote. We talk to them about why voting matters, how they vote, where they go, how it works. Then we register them to vote, and we have the equipment that they can use. We've got to get back to a focus in the energy that we are spending, election administrators and also the legislature, in empowering people, not disenfranchising people. And all over the country, what I'm seeing is moving in the wrong direction.
Linda Phillips, I'm going to set you up to, I hope, make the argument on the other side here, which I think you alluded to earlier on, and that is in terms of tightening up the process. Obviously, the argument for voter ID laws is that, you know, if you're not a citizen or you're not eligible to vote, you can't prove that. You you shouldn't be able to vote. Is that fair? Is that the spirit behind some of these other reforms that we're seeing?
Well, I don't think any of our legislators want to restrict the rights of citizens to vote. I think, though, that one of the things that happens is that citizens lose confidence in the process, and therefore there's a more of an attitude of why bother. So I think the legislature, and you know, obviously Beth and I can disagree on this, feels that there needs to be a level of confidence in the process, and part of that is proving who you say you are and that you are a citizen and that you are entitled and that you do live in the precinct that you say you live in. And I don't think those are unreasonable things that citizens should have to prove to vote. Now, I do think that we need to make the process easier. You know, part of the 30-day registration was based on an old system where you hand-typed poll lists. So, yeah, do we need to shorten up the registration period? Absolutely. I don't have any problem with that. You know, now we have instant access. We can do electronic poll books. We can do a whole lot of things, if they were authorized under Indiana law, to make that process shorter and more efficient. So, you know, we can move that direction, but fundamentally citizens need to be confident that that one person, one vote, and that elections are administered in a fair and impartial manner. And I think most of the effort of our legislators have been to assure citizens of that.
We are talking about election reform here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Julia Vaughn, you probably spend more time over at the legislature as really the primary lobbyist for Common Cause and other good government groups than, frankly, is probably healthy for any human being. But also,
true that.
But also is more than any of the rest of us do here. And I guess what I would ask you is take a different look at this. Why do we see these efforts at some level to restrict ballot access? Is it because, as Beth says, that there's an attempt to narrow the electorate here, or is it, as Linda says, to improve voter confidence or public confidence in the process?
Well, you know, in Indiana, given that there have been zero cases of in-person voter fraud prosecuted, at least in my almost 25, 26 years of closely following this, so I don't think it's really done much to, you know, assuage any fears, because I don't think those fears existed with voters. I think this is about gaining a partisan advantage. And it's really distressing when, you know, access to voting is used. You know, Republicans really believe that if you restrict ballot access, it gains them a little bit electorally. I think Democrats believe that if you loosen it up, they gain a little bit in terms of election results. So really, it's about politics. The things that we need to get away from, and unfortunately, there's really no precedent, no history of this happening in Indiana. But what we need to strive for is nonpartisan election administration. I mean, one of the problems, as I see it, is we put some pretty intense partisans in charge of running the elections. And so it's a natural that tempers flare. There aren't many places that take a very nonpartisan approach. I'm actually going to give a shout out to Allen County. It's not like they don't have political feuds up there. But in terms of the 92 counties in Indiana, they've seemed to be able to get as close as possible to nonpartisanship.
What do they do that's different?
There's nothing different. I think it's just the folks they have hired. There's been a woman named Pam Finlayson. I don't know that she's still in charge up there, but for years she ran the elections, and she was recognized across the state of Indiana of just being highly professional and as much as possible, given she's a political, you know, hire. It's not possible to take politics totally out of election. But I think much of it has to do with the political culture. If the two parties decide we are going to work together to make voting accessible and as easy as possible for the citizens in our community, that's what we need to do. Unfortunately, here in Marion County and a lot of other places in Indiana, there just hasn't been the spirit of cooperation. And again, it's not because these aren't nice, fine people. They are. They're just intense partisans, and they're out to gain advantage. And if controlling access to voting gets them an advantage, then, you know, they're happy to do that.
I want to come back to that in a moment. We've gotten an email question from a listener named Martin who says, new law prohibits elections. That's the actual language in uncontested races. Excuse me. Beth, is this true, or is there a law on the books now that would prohibit an election if the race is uncontested?
As a matter of fact, there is, and it is a law that has been the source of controversy. And my interpretation of it here in Marion County, it was intended. The Clerks Association, of which I'm a member, asked for some flexibility. Okay, one of the things I think is really important in this whole discussion is local control of elections, flexibility in doing what is good and best for your community. And what the Clerks Association asked for a change in the legislature to say that if there are no contested races in a place, a small town, a city, in a certain county, then they shouldn't have to, you know, fight what I call fire up their election apparatus, right? They shouldn't have to run an election for no reason. It has been interpreted to say that non-contested people should be left off the ballot in a place like Marion County. I think that's wrong. I think that is not the intent of the legislation, and I think that's not what it requires. And so in Marion County, I've made the decision, because I'm, you know, local control is what I can do, is that we're putting everybody on the ballot. If they are a proper candidate, if they've filed, if they meet the qualifications, they should be listed on the ballot. One of the things that I think Julia is exactly right, that people get very sort of cynical about the process, is that they see this kind of what they perceive to be gamesmanship, and that, you know, I'm leaving people off because I think I can. I think that's wrong. We should have open process. And for me, a thing like putting everybody on the ballot makes our process open. And that's what I'm going to do.
We are talking about election reform here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Fain, welcome to the program.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
That's good. Your question?
Well, my question is more of a comment. I think one of the reasons that we have a low turnout in Indiana is because we have such a limited choice in people we vote for. As a registered Democrat in Hamilton County, when I vote, I hold my nose. I vote in many elections, and I hold my nose while I vote, while I make my choice. I pick the person who I think will best represent me, but it's not necessarily my first choice. We need more choices in who we vote for.
Good question. We'll take that up. Thank you for calling. Okay, well, that argument basically that to some degree also is not specifically the subject here, but it is really, she's dealing with a question of gerrymandering and packing districts and all of that. Julia Vaughn, you're nodding your head.
Well, yes and no. You know, there are places in our state, you know, Republicans in certain parts of Lake County have the same feeling on Election Day. It's a truism that, you know, people of tend to flock together. So there are always going to be places where there aren't many choices. But I'd like, you know, there should be, frankly, more choices than just Republican, Democrat. Libertarians, frankly, have achieved remarkable status by getting themselves automatically on the ballot. That bar is set extremely high in Indiana. And we really don't have the, you know, variety of different parties that there are in some other states. The Greens, the, you know, just the Workers' Party,
right.
The Democratic.
Farm labor.
Yeah, farm labor. There are some states where, you know, you get 5, 6, 7 choices. But in most places in Indiana, it's Republican, Democrat. In some places, you have the third Libertarian choice.
Yeah, what Julia said about ballot access is really important. We have extremely difficult rules about getting on the ballot. Libertarians have achieved it quite remarkably, I think. Other parties have tried and have just, frankly, given up. They don't see our state. Again, it goes back to my theme. Our state laws are too restrictive. They're too restrictive for voters. They're too restrictive for candidates, in my opinion. And our legislature doesn't address that. They address ways in which, in my opinion, they can disenfranchise
people.
But
it is fair to say, at some level, both parties do not have clean hands here.
Well, they don't address it because who are our legislators?
Right.
Yeah. They're Republicans and they're Democrats.
Right, I get it.
But, I mean, Republicans fought for years to keep the Libertarians off the ballot to some degree, and Democrats were not exactly thrilled to see Ralph Nader on the ballot.
It's a true story. That's absolutely true. There isn't a single non-affiliated person in our legislature. We have no independents. We have no libertarians. We have Democrats, Republicans. And I know that my friends in the Democrat Party who are probably listening are cringing right now to hear me say this. But I think it's a larger issue than just this community or my political experience. It's an issue of Linda is right that people in some ways feel discouraged about the process, but I think she and I come at that for different reasons. I believe the discouragement is about restriction and not this sort of phantom notion that there's all this fraud. There's no fraud. We have no cases of in-person voter fraud. You know, other states have looked into this. Actually, just yesterday, the Secretary of State of the state of Maine made a report to the people of Maine that he spent 2 months investigating this issue. Allegedly, there's all this voter fraud in it, back to what Linda said about students. There isn't any. He found no evidence of that. We are wasting time, we're wasting money, and we're wasting energy trying to, you know, it's a solution in search of a problem, in my opinion.
Linda, are there cases of voter fraud on the record here? Or?
We have seen some cases, primarily in fraudulent registration drives. Beth is right that we don't know that there's any in-person voter fraud, although, you know, not knowing it and not existing are not necessarily the same. Most of our issues up here have come with fraudulent voter registration drives. So there is, I think, instances where it could happen. You know, it could happen. And I suspect that there are, on occasion, some students that may vote here locally and vote in their home states as well.
There's no evidence of that. I mean, I get back to the notion that other states have universities, lots of them, and they figure out how to make this work. And, you know, it's a cannon to kill a fly. OK, if this could be happening, there's no evidence of that. Why are we passing state laws that restrict something that we don't even think is happening?
We've got Nick on the phone right now, and I think he's got a question right on point here. Nick, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
You joined at exactly the right moment here.
I think maybe one of your speakers made the point while I was talking with your receiver. Mm-hmm. I wanted to emphasize that I believe it came up with either Kentucky or Indiana in the discussion in 2006. If I'm wrong, but I believe one of the leading civil rights workers from the 60s, either Annie Young or Julian Bond, and I can't, you know, I apologize if I'm wrong about both, simply said, instead of focusing on keeping people from having the requirement, why don't you focus your efforts on making sure they can meet the requirement?
Good question. We'll take it up. Thank you, Nick.
And I'm thinking about, for instance, old people. You'd figure out a way, if they don't have a birth certificate, you'd find some other way of documenting them. If you know, and you get all this whining about, you know, poor old people and poor students, they might not vote. Well, if they want to vote, they could vote. Tell them you want them to vote.
Okay.
Anyway,
thank you. Thanks for the question, Nick. Appreciate it. Okay, Beth White, that argument basically that we ought to encourage people to get their IDs.
Absolutely. I mean, the ID issue in Indiana is a fait accompli. I was against it when it was passed. I went to the Supreme Court in Washington to hear the argument. What I'm concerned about is the notion that now that we have this restrictive law, why aren't we helping people navigate it? People don't understand. They don't know. They give up. They feel discouraged and frustrated. So that's where our energies ought to be focused. That's what we ought to be doing as a state.
We are talking about election reform here on No Limits with our guests, Marion County Clerk Beth White, Tippecanoe County Assessor and former Clerk Linda Phillips, and Julia Vaughn of Common Cause Indiana. You can join the conversation, just as Nick did, by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about Indiana election reform with our guests, Marion County Clerk Beth White, Tippecanoe County Assessor and former clerk Linda Phillips, and Julia Vaughn of Common Cause Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. On a related note here, I probably should make an election-related programming note. WFYI Radio will broadcast an Indianapolis mayoral debate coming up next Tuesday, the debate between incumbent Republican Greg Ballard and Democratic opponent Melina Kennedy will start just after noon, live from the Indianapolis Rotary Club. That's next Tuesday on 90.1 FM, WFYI Public Radio. You'll also be able to hear Melina Kennedy next Thursday on the program, and on October 20th, we'll have Mayor Ballard in here. Well, we are getting a lot of calls right now and emails, and I'm going to ask an email question now from a listener named K.M. Washington, and it says, the large turnout in 2008 proved that vast majorities have faith in the process. In fact, that is the expressed fear of the Republican leaders. Thusly, the traditional attempt on the part of right-wing groups and Republican operatives across this nation is to suppress authentic access to fair voting. I'm not sure it's fair, Linda Phillips, to make you sort of be the spokesperson for your entire party, but but you are the representative here. Do you want to respond to that?
Well, I think what we saw in 2008 had less to do with anybody trying to suppress the vote, but in large part, the turnout in the primary was a result of it actually making a difference if you voted in the primary. I mean, by and large in Indiana, our primary is so late, on a national level, those candidates have been decided already. So whatever the Indiana does makes no difference. So why bother? You know, people don't have enough time to do everything that they would want to do. So, by and large, you pick and choose where your efforts make a difference. So that's what I think we saw in 2008. Whether or not we have confidence in the process, I don't know. You know, I think we run a good process in Indiana. I do think Beth has a very good point, though, in that we do make things a little bit too difficult. Just before I left office as clerk, I worked on a committee that was rewriting many of Indiana's voter forms in simple, understandable language, because all of our forms were written by lawyers. They're not understandable.
I resemble that remark.
Yeah,
and so, you know, we worked very hard, a number of clerks did, to rewrite these forms. And while everyone agreed we had lovely forms, nothing changed.
Well, and on that, we've gotten a question actually from a lawyer, a good friend of mine who's actually works at my old shop, Current Attitudes by Political Majorities, is to embrace what I call the politics of exclusion. Mm. Beth White.
Well, yeah, thanks for that question, Gil. I'm a big fan of Gil Holmes and the work that he does. I think so. I do. I mean, you asked a question a little while ago, John, about why is it so contentious. And mm-hmm. I think, again, I'm coming back to the notion that because there's a lot at stake. And I do think that some of the rhetoric in politics today, not just surrounding these issues, but surrounding any issues, does discourage or turn people off from wanting to participate. And I'm sorry that that's true, and I try personally not to be, to fall into that. And so I do, you know, I believe, again, that we have too restrictive a process. We need to work on it. We need to put our energies there. And I personally will do what I can, you know, to make voting work. I mean, the 2008 turnout was high, but it was 2/3 of the people in the state of Indiana. It wasn't even so high that it got percentages that we'd like to see. And I think, again, you know, access to early voting opportunities, flexible voting opportunities really is the key to this. And we're not moving in the right direction.
We are talking about election reform here in Indiana with our guests, Beth White, Linda Phillips, and Julia Vaughn. Bill, welcome to the program.
Yes.
How are you? Sorry, a little bit of
a delay
there. Your question, please.
Well, my question or comment is, I believe Beth White is correct in that the new legislation that was passed is too restrictive for voters. They just make it too difficult to encourage people to go and vote in their local community. So I think that's too restrictive. And I wholeheartedly support the work that Julia Vaughn is doing in Common Cause and agree that we need to clean up elections so that more people will participate in the process rather than just be left out because they can't come up with the financing.
Thank you for the call, Bill.
Thank you.
Take care. We are, his point about people at, to some degree being turned off by the process, it's not simply the, though the ballot access, we probably ought to talk a little bit about, and I think all three of you have alluded to the partisan nature, the tone. How much of that does that create a disincentive for people to get engaged, that they step back? Julia Vaughn.
Well, I think that increasingly, you know, voters are hesitant to describe themselves as a Republican or Democrat. More and more folks identify themselves as an independent voter. So it's difficult when the argument is intense between two sides and you don't feel part of either of those sides. You know, there's public policy, and then there's the politics. And I think that increasingly politics is overtaking discussions of public policy, and that's what's frustrating voters.
Let me say,
Beth
though,
White,
and I don't disagree with Julia at all, but our election process involves the political parties. That is by design. These decisions are made by election boards. They are appointed by the political chair people in the county. And this was what we saw with my fight about satellite voting. We have a Democrat, a Republican, and me, ex officio as the clerk, serving on the election board. The parties have policy input, and that is by design. And Julia believes that we
what
should
is
move
the
away
reason,
from that.
What is the reasoning for that? I mean, that sounds a little bit like putting pyromaniacs in charge of the fire department. But
well, you know, I don't know. It's been that way since the founding of our state, right? I mean, I can't. I don't know what the sort of.
And I think that's it. You know, when we go to the state house and try to discuss it, the response is, "But it's always been that way." You know?
not a great answer.
It's a circular argument.
Right.
It really
you
is.
You know, and we are the state that didn't get daylight savings time until a couple of years ago, so we're not exactly ahead of the curve in these issues. So that's just by design. And so for political people to say, well, you know, I'm about politics and not about policy is just a cop-out. We have to figure out a way for the political parties who are in charge of this process, like it or don't like it, to transcend that politics and to be about the business of the policy of running good elections. I've tried to do that. We haven't totally succeeded, but I am continuing every day to work in that vein.
We are talking about election reform with our guests, Marion County Clerk Beth White, Tippecanoe County Assessor and former clerk Linda Phillips, and Julia Vaughn of Common Cause, Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Gotten an email question from Clee Oliver in Kokomo. Says, if I am not mistaken, the filing period has been changed for candidates effective July 1st of this year to January 6th for 30 days instead of January 20th. My question and comment would be why, and is this done to confuse a potential candidate or candidates?
Linda,
Beth White or Linda Phillips?
That's not my job to do, but Linda, you participated in the issues relating to our military and overseas. So do you want to take that one?
Linda?
It's not intended at all to confuse potential candidates. It was intended to allow a longer time period for us to get ballots to our military and overseas voters. One of the problems was that when filing ends as late as it did before, we didn't have enough time to mail those ballots to our soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, we need, obviously, that's an incredibly important thing that we need to do. So that was the entire reason for the change. It had absolutely nothing to do with, you know, restricting access to candidates.
Gordon, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Your question.
I'm wondering why they're in such a rush to get people to vote. If they haven't thought about it and don't know what, haven't really thought about what they want to vote for, I don't think they really should be pulling the lever. It's my opinion, the same day registration, I mean, if they can't think about it any more than that, if somebody's just got on spur of a moment to vote for somebody, I really don't want them electing my representatives.
Wow.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. Thank you for the question, Gordon. Okay, Julia Vaughn, I think that's probably directed toward you made the argument for same-day registration.
Well, I just disagree. I think that, you know, our current voting process is set up on a 19th century model. You know, there's a reason for voting in the first Tuesday in November. It's so that, you know, the property owners who needed to travel in their horse and buggy to the county seat would have their crops in and, you know, they'd be able to do that. It still would be good weather. You know, that model doesn't fit for many people today. You know, I think that just because somebody would register on election day, it doesn't mean they haven't thought about this process. I mean, if only people voted on whim. I don't think they do. I think that we need to do whatever we can to make voting more accessible. I talked about the voter guide, an effort to try to put some trusted information in the hands of voters. So things like moving the voter registration deadline forward, the state seeing its role being to provide access to information, a very simple thing like changing to no-fault absentee. You know, there's this myth that anybody has the right to vote.
What is no-fault absentee? Explain that term.
Well, there's a myth. I'll tell you what it is, and I guess. You know, there's this myth that anybody has the legal right to vote absentee in Indiana. That's not actually true. That's only applicable to if you're over 65, have a disability, or you're in the military. If you do not fit one of those categories, you have to check some boxes on the application form for your absentee ballot that indicates you'll be working 12 hours, you will be out of the county. It's really a very restrictive process. And so if you're just seeking to vote absentee by mail for convenience, none of these restrictions apply to you. And if you apply for a ballot, really, you're committing fraud by, you know, saying that you wouldn't be able to vote in person on Election Day. That has been something that it has been a partisan battle at the General Assembly for years. Democrats favor changing this so that anybody who wants to vote for convenience by mail absentee has the right to do so. Republicans have resisted it. And again, I think it all goes back to this attitude that Republicans seem to have. We want people to suffer a little bit before they can vote. We want them to jump over some hurdles to get to the ballot.
John, just let me, if I could,
real quickly,
please.
Beth,
I want to clarify. Absentee voting is the term we use for everything that doesn't happen on Election Day. They need to be. We need to distinguish between mail-in and in-person. Julia's argument was very coherent about mail-in.
Right.
We should have no-fault mail-in absentee. Other states do. There's no reason not to have it. In person, you do not have to have a reason, but you do have to have your ID. So when I'm out in the community talking about these issues, you know, again, it's complicated. Why is it so complicated? Why shouldn't we have one set of rules? But if you vote in person early, not on Election Day, you do not have to have a reason.
Well, let me ask real quickly, since we've talked about the voter ID law and talked about how people don't understand it, I do want to get to a couple of the other listener questions we've got here. But what kind of ID do you have to have when you go to the poll now to vote?
The ID, Indiana's ID law is the strictest in the country. It has to have four things. It has to have a photo. It has to have an expiration date, which is a day, a month, and a year. Your name has to conform to the name in the poll book. Not exact, but conform. And it has to be issued by the state of Indiana or the federal government. So what we see, I mean, I've been through this with my students. I was just yesterday at Ben Davis, and we spent a while talking about this. Driver's licenses, state IDs issued by the BMV, active military, passports. Good luck getting anything else to meet those criteria. Our university IDs do not have expiration dates because, as you know, students take a while. And our state, you know, out-of-state driver's licenses do not work. So that's it, four criteria.
We have gotten a question by email from Stephanie Crossan, a listener who says, as I volunteer at a free legal clinic and a Republican, and I concur with your speaker, I remain opposed to the voter ID law. It limits voting. Many people have difficulty securing the proper identification. Securing proper ID is expensive and difficult. Says, I have examples. What is the easiest way, then? If this is the law and it's going to stay as the law, what is the easiest way for somebody to secure the proper ID who might not have one? Linda Phillips.
Well, in Indiana, I mean, the problem is not getting the ID. The problem is getting the underlying documents, because the Bureau of Motor Vehicles issues the ID for free for voting purposes. But people do run into issues getting their birth certificates if they were born in other states, or the other kinds of things they need to prove identity and residence. However, I will say, you know, at least here locally, our political party has done a really good job of people who have those issues. They come to us. We help them. In many cases, we've paid for it. You know, there are ways around this, and that's where we've put our efforts. I mean, the law, as Beth mentioned, it's the law. But, you know, people who are compassionate and care about this process find ways to work to get people the documents they need.
Jan, we have about 30 seconds. Can you get a question in that quickly?
Yes, very quickly. They mentioned a concern about students voting both at home and at school. What about senior citizens who probably are more likely to vote Republican, voting both in their Florida home or their Arizona home, and where they spend 6 months, and their Indiana home?
Good question. Yep. We will take it up with the time remaining. Thank you.
And should there be a way to stop that, as well as stopping students voting twice?
Thank you for the question. We'll take it up as quickly as we can. Well, Beth White,
the integrity of the vote is important. I agree with that. Whether it's students or it's seniors, but frankly, nursing homes versus where they used to live is also an issue. I believe that we ought to address those issues. But again, there is no evidence of that in Indiana. And my frustration is that we're spending all of our time trying to disprove this fact with our restrictive policies and not focusing on education, outreach, and making it easier.
We have been talking and had one of our liveliest conversations, I think, about election reform here, and have been fortunate to have as our guest Marion County Clerk Beth White. Beth, thank you for joining us. I've enjoyed
this. It's my pleasure, always.
Tippecanoe County Assessor and former Clerk Linda Phillips, thank you for joining us. I hope we can get you to come back sometime.
Okay. Be happy to.
Thank you. And Julia Vaughn of Common Cause Indiana. Julia, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
It was a good conversation. I'd also like to thank all of our listeners, particularly those who called in with some great questions and made this one of the fastest-paced and liveliest hours one could experience. Please join us next week when we will be talking with the woman who would like to be Indianapolis's first female mayor, Democrat Melina Kennedy, who will be here for the full hour taking your questions. You can call us at 1-866-476-3881 or send emails at nolimits@wfyi.org. I am John Kroll, your host. See you next week.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alsep. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m. And you can listen online at WFYI.org.